music.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the January 1st, 2012 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard, the podcast devoted to the discussion of news and politics from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy, Objectivism. I'm your host, Amy Peacock, and here are the topics that I have planned for our New Year's Day show. First, why I'm not necessarily sad to leave 2011 behind, although there were, of course, some good things that 2011 brought too, and we'll talk about those. Do you think that 2012 will be better? And we'll also do a little bit of New Year's resolution discussion. Second, the Obama administration recruits the Muslim Brotherhood's leading jurist to mediate secret negotiations between the United States and Taliban. Oh, joy. And the big question, which of the GOP candidates do you think would probably do the same exact thing? Third, we're going to try to leave off on a better note because I'm going to tell you some more good things that I learned about Steve Jobs, this time from a 1995 interview of him by Computer World. And we've got a little bit more if there's time. Before we dive in here, there's some logistics. There's two ways for those of you who are attending live to interact. The first is give us a call, 760-888-5817. Again, that's 760-888-5817. Otherwise, you can participate here in the chat room. I see one or two of you already starting to type there in the chat room, so go ahead and type your comments. I'd like to hear maybe your New Year's resolutions if you have some interesting ones. So let's go ahead and get started with our obligatory, I guess, year-end review. If you have a show on New Year's Day, I guess you feel like you have to do a year-end review. I sent a tweet, actually I think in two tweets I could say almost all that I want to say about why I'm not necessarily upset to leave 2011 behind. We had the Japanese earthquake followed by tsunami followed by nuclear accident. If that wasn't enough, we had a debt limit increase, which the GOP caved in and allowed, and followed by a nice credit downgrade. I guess the first credit downgrade in U.S. history. Yeah. Steve Jobs died, and as more and more things come out about him and his life, we learn exactly how much we've lost.
Yeah.
Then there's the so-called Arab Spring, which we keep seeing the results and ramifications of the Arab Spring in country after country in the Middle East. Essentially, we've got the true believers of Islam who want to have Islam dominate the world. We have them taking over in country after country. And then Occupy Wall Street. Now, Occupy Wall Street, I don't think was a huge deal, although wasn't it Times Person of the Year became the protester?
Yeah, I think they were occupying the news headlines, maybe, and now they're not.
The fact that Occupy Wall Street could even exist and that you could have people out there spouting the kinds of things that they were spouting, I think said something kind of yucky about our culture. And if that's not enough, we have a very lousy GOP field.
Yeah.
The only outside the box candidate that I kind of liked in this race was pretty inept and plagued by scandal. So, I mean, a lot of this, I sort of just want to say good riddance. Yeah. There were some good things. Now I've got Earl here. Earl says, everyone I know is glad to be leaving 2011 behind and looking forward to moving on to 2012, myself included.
Yeah.
What if 2012 is worse than 2011? Martin in the chat room here says, good galt, if that's true.
Awesome.
This is the thing. 2011, besides the Japanese tsunami, earthquake, tsunami, nuclear accident, right, which is a delimited in time, I believe, emergency. I don't think it's going to have any long-scale ramifications. There's some money lost, right? There's some value lost. There's some true wealth lost. But I've heard from some people, actually only one person, that I lie if I say some. I heard from one person who said that, yes, his life was disrupted by this, but that it actually turned out to be better for him on the other side, that somehow the disruption had some people rearranging their lives in a certain way. It could be the sort of thing where that kind of emergency gets you thinking about what's truly important in your life.
Like 9/11 did in a lot of ways. You brought everything important
now
to the front.
Deborah in the chat room here says there's no way it's going to be worse because we get to vote Obama out in 2012.
I mean, I hope.
We get to vote him out. He's still going to be here for 2012. He's still going to be doing damage, of which we're talking about today, unfortunately.
Especially if he loses the election, then for the last few months, he'll be really...
Yeah, if he loses the election, can you imagine the kind of bender that he's going to go on with those executive orders or whatever else?
He'll be a spoiler.
I don't know. I don't know about being optimistic about this year because, and the point I was making about the earthquake, although the Japanese earthquake and the fallout from that is kind of short-lived, the rest of it is going to have these ramifications for a long time. I mean, of the things that I told you about, the negative things that I told you about, the only one where I see, you know, some positive ramifications, not that I wanted Steve Jobs to die, okay? I did not want Steve Jobs to die, but a lot of people are learning about him and his ideas, and they're having an appreciation not just for the things that he accomplished, but they're also, for instance, looking at some of the good things he said in the Stanford graduation address, and then there's some things that I'll talk about today. There's a lot of good stuff in the biography. You know, this idea that someone can go out there and talk about wanting to hire only A people at his company and keep them all surrounded by A people, and he isn't being blatantly, disgustingly criticized all over the place. I mean, in some fields he is, you know, in some arenas he has been, but in the, you know, outside sort of the tech industry where there's some people who had grudges against him, people seem to have a genuine admiration for him, and there's a lot of good stuff that he says. So the fact that his ideas, I think, got more exposure, a wider hearing, wasn't bad. So that had some good ramifications. There's another good thing. I mean, there's obviously some other good things about, you know, personally, I got to start the Ayn Rand bot. I got to start this podcast. So
I got to start the Infidel series, personally.
Yeah. Bosch got to release the first of his Infidel series. So there are some good things that we accomplished on our own level. In terms of out there in the culture, I can point to one thing that I really liked seeing, and I was reminded of it today because of Sunny Lohman. Sunny Lohman has a post on PJ Media right now, and it's called the 10 funniest right side political satire videos. So that might be something if you need a way to just kind of say good riddance to 2011. You might enjoy watching some of those videos. The one that I enjoyed watching was actually a clip from David Letterman, and it was Martin Short singing an homage, to Osama bin Laden. And it was funny. And so what that reminded me of, and it also gave me evidence of, the further continuation of David Letterman standing up to having been threatened by a jihadist, right? If you know the story, if you actually go on my blog at don'tletitgo.com, if you haven't heard of this yet, just search Thank You, David Letterman, because that was the title that I had of a blog post there. And David Letterman, after Osama bin Laden was killed, had a show in which he made a number of jokes. And when he did that, he was threatened. There was a fatwa issued against him. And then the big question was, you know, how is he going to react to this on his show? Yeah. And apparently for some time after that, he kept it up. He kept making more and more fun. And this Martin Short piece, you have to go watch it. It's really good.
Well written.
So I think overall there's more awareness of the jihadist threat in the culture, that some good things have come out of the GOP debates along those lines.
And also in pop culture, Frank Miller finally released his graphic novel, his anti-jihad graphic novel, Holy Terror, and it was a bestseller.
Right.
It made a lot of noise.
Now, Martin here in the chat room is saying that he saw a documentary about Jobs when he started up Next, Young and Handsome, reminded me a bit about Francisco. The interview that I watched that I'm going to talk about a little bit, Martin, is also from that time period. Yeah. It behind him during the interview, I believe the interview was conducted by Computer World, and that their intention had been to create an interview that was going to be archived for 300 years.
Right.
So, you know, document this exciting time in history with all the innovation. And the next logo was prominently behind him during the entire interview on a computer screen there. So let's see what else. The environmentalists got some fuel for their arguments by the Fukushima meltdown. And he says, not any real fuel, of course. Yeah. No, because I think that the Japanese, of course, had set up their nuclear facility so well. I mean, imagine all the natural disaster that it took to even make a dent in the performance of their nuclear reactors there. They showed anything that it's that nuclear power is very safe.
Right.
So I think anybody who has, you know, a sense of the objective is going to, so that might be one good thing that came out of it, is that we saw, you know, well-constructed nuclear facilities pose relatively little risk, even when you've got these huge earthquakes. So thanks for bringing that up, Martin, because you could actually kind of spin that into a positive. But so then my pessimism about 2012 is that we still have to deal with this debt limit increase, the credit downgrade. Obama, because he got his debt limit increase, is now asking for more. I heard he's asking for another $1.2 trillion. We've already exceeded.
He has no shame.
We've exceeded GDP with the debt. The total debt exceeds GDP, which is nuts. We still have this lousy GOP field. We've got to choose one of these people to try to get rid of Obama. And I'm not optimistic that we're going to get someone who's very much better. I've got a kind of strategy to talk about that. And then, of course, you know, the horrible thing is now Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher are no longer together. So, I mean, we have to survive through 2012 without them being together. So I think that's very sad.
I believe.
Now, for 2012, though, we've got some good stuff, right? More followers, I hope, for the Iran bot. I was pretty excited. I started the Iran bot, which is the little Twitter account that tweets out the quotations from Ayn Rand. I started that in the beginning of July, and it's got about 3,100 followers right now.
Yep.
So I was excited that it's grown that much. So I could have little quantitative goals for the next year, which is on the order of 10,000, I'm thinking, because maybe the more you get, the more you get. But there also might be some top limit to it. I don't know. But I think it's done a lot of good. And it was a lot of fun to figure out just as a problem. How do you create this bot and automatize it and stuff? I had a good time doing that. Solidified a book idea for myself. I've worked on a chapter of the book that has been sort of missing in my work on privacy. And I proposed a lecture to the Objectivist Conference that's going to include this new piece and some of the previous work sort of refined. And that is accepted. So in July, I'm going to be giving a series of lectures at the Objectivist Conference in San Diego. So that's good. Looking forward to a nice accomplishment. I became a contributor to PJ Media this year, contributed a couple posts. I need to do more. My blog, up and down. I need to do more there. I need to write more there. So this is something we have to do.
I've actually posted too much on my blog. I felt like I had to respond to every little thing, and that's going to change this year.
Yeah, I think we don't have to respond to everything. No. And I think I saw a post that was going around on Facebook, and I haven't read it yet. You know how it is. You kind of say, okay, maybe I should read that. Next time it comes around in my newsfeed, I'm going to take a look.
Right.
Someone was saying something about, I think it was Burgess Laughlin maybe, who said something about, you know, how he approaches selecting candidates. And You, at a certain point, when you've gotten enough information about these people, you don't need to bury yourself in every single detail anymore, because you're just going to make yourself more depressed.
And you also know that they're all crap in a lot of ways. I mean, they are. So they pick the best piece of crap. Who's going to be the least disruptive? Again, that is the answer.
Who's the most likely to buy us time to make it a better culture?
Repeal Obamacare, maybe push it somehow, some way. If they get the Senate, if there's more Republicans out there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing. And also Obama, again, if he's reelected, the Supreme Court justices, you know, he might appoint. And it'll be
I don't even know how to feel about Supreme Court justices. Because if he appoints them, they're going to be liberals who uphold Obamacare and any other disgusting thing that happens. And if the next Republican, who's likely going to be a religious conservative, appoints one, then you're going to have somebody who wants to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Because once like Obamacare succeeds, and they say, okay, well, you got yours, we'll get ours now.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Then we've got this big problem that's on the horizon here. Iran. Yeah. Iran, I don't even know if it's blustering or if it's true. You know, Ron Paul would say it's fantasy, but I tend to take people at their word, at least if you're going to say, what can I hold them accountable to? Iran is saying that they've created their first nuclear fuel rod. They're proudly announcing this. You know, they want to have their cake and eat it too, huge, right? They want to give people like Ron Paul enough deniability to say, oh, it's just a peaceful nuclear program. Yeah, they have a nuclear fuel rod, but they only want it. But at the same time, they make these statements in a way of like, ha ha, we got the nuclear fuel rod. You should be scared. We're doing it defiantly, you know?
And the fact that they have killed Americans.
Yeah.
They're not doing this in a vacuum where, oh, they're just bluster. No, they've killed Americans. They've been at war with us for 30 years, 30 plus years, through Hezbollah, through other groups.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Ron Paul, the old day he was asked about it, he goes, well, We've been beating the war drums for years against Iran. Iran has been beating the war drums against us. We have responded.
People have to get their history straight. So that could happen with this year.
Terrible, yeah. And Obama, again, someone actually said that it's possible that Obama might react to them. He might do something about Iran finally, as a way to
get reelected
and then destroy us.
Exactly.
But then fully.
Exactly.
And that's possible. I mean, it will, everything it does foreign policy-wise, always in terms of its re-election anyway. And some people fall for it and say, you got to give it to him. He killed him. Oh, it's not a lot. Yeah, because he killed him.
So I don't know whether to be hopeful about 2012. I tend to...
I do feel, just on an emotional level, hopeful. I do. I really do.
I mean, I think if we do vote out Obama, that is going to create some value in our minds at least. And I would say even if it's Romney, we're going to feel better than if it's Obama.
I guess, too, yeah. I mean, we will. I hate saying that.
I hate saying it, too. But
I hate looking at him. Listening to him.
I mean, he'd give me a lot of food for fodder. I could keep my show up completely busy with all sorts of things to critique him.
He's
not
as anti-business as Obama. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's not. That alone is at least better on technical level.
Well, at least you could hold him to being pro-business.
And you probably could push him towards being on the right a little more, you know, than Obama, clearly.
But one thing we can do while we're trying to wait out this storm, because we sort of have an idea of what we're dealing with for the elections, unless we get a wild card that jumps in. I'd welcome anybody that's going to jump in at this point. But we have an idea of what we're dealing with. Someone says magic underwear Romney. Did I miss something? You're going to have to tell us what we're missing, spaghettification, about magic underwear Romney that you're talking about in the chat room.
Obama has to get the hell out. And Rourke 2112 says it, but that's the point. He has to get out. He's too self-destructive.
Yeah, and what I'm going to talk about today, the story I've got today, is even more fuel for your efforts to get him out. Chris here says, more here in which hydrocarbon recovery techniques were so technologically successful that they will allow the U.S. to be independent of the Mideast producers.
Hmm.
That would be excellent if they don't outlaw it before it happens.
They will. I mean, our government would protect us.
I remember seeing stories on this too, right? And then the environmentalists were saying it's dangerous and it's this and it's because everybody wants to poo-poo anything. You know, this is the thing
the
about. Am I allowed to say that online? By the way, I just said poo-poo.
I said all the contenders, candidates are crap. So you got to pick which is the least most dangerous crap.
If we could get in a candidate who actually believed that we should go for energy independence and allowed it to happen, just didn't get in the way, that would be wonderful. I mean,
basically to try to, you know, get back to some kind of norm.
Martin's talking about Romney. Mormons have magic underwear. So they can't even ask him the question that they've asked. I don't know if they asked Obama, but I remember they asked Clinton. Remember they used to ask Clinton, boxers or briefs?
Did they?
Yeah, someone on MTV. He was trying to be cool. Yeah. Clinton, I don't know if you remember that.
The big afro also. And I suppose they took that out because it was too, you know, racy.
Too crazy or something. But, you know, so what you try to do with 2012 also is you just have a balance of focus on your own personal goals and the things that you want to do to make it a better year. Because I think that if we get too caught up in the things in the world, politics and everything, I mean, we have to keep our hands on it because it affects all of us. But in order to have that optimistic feeling, I think we more got to, you know, kind of focus on what we're going to do to hopefully take advantage yeah. of a better economic climate when things get better. Because that's the idea. The idea is we're yeah. going to get Obama out. Things are going to get at least somewhat better economically. We're going to buy some time to turn the culture around. And we've got certain ways that we want to, of course, help turn the culture around, but also just achieve things that we want to do for ourselves, for having a good life.
It almost seems to be, at least in terms of presidents, it almost seems to be like this last president is similar to the next one, like Reagan. And then he went to, you know, Bush, who was weaker, far weaker version than Reagan, but he was still closer to Reagan than anyone. And then Clinton, and then Bush, with not that much difference. I mean, personal things, yeah, in terms of spending and all that crap and Islamist peace, and then Obama. So you can't go to an extreme change from Obama. You got to go to someone that's pretty close to Obama, like Romney, closer than any other GOP candidate, to get to someone maybe better later on. It's just the way it is. You always need a – it's like a – that's why a president, you know, the administration is pretty close to
Obama. Well, then explain, though, the Carter to Reagan.
Well, that was, I think, a case where, I don't know. I mean, Reagan ran president 4 years.
Because that would be what we want right now. Because Obama's worse than Carter.
But there is no Reagan right now. That's the thing.
But why isn't there a Reagan?
I don't know. And that's something that maybe you said you might write about.
Yeah, that's something.
But listen, Reagan did run prior to that. He lost. I think the fact is people voted for something that they didn't know Carter enough. They voted for him. When they knew who he was, they voted him the hell out with Reagan.
That's what we're all hoping is going to happen with Obama, right? That they voted him in when they didn't know him, and now they know him, and they want him out.
The only thing he had going for him in 08 was no one knew him.
Yeah.
But those who paid attention knew enough that, wait a minute, he's friends with terrorists? That should be enough. But now we know him. And that's why, but what's the contrast? What is, you know, there's no Reagan here, you know? There is no Reagan.
Now, Martin has some news that seems to be better. He says, I got invited to hold a lecture on Ayn Rand and objectivism for a political youth organization. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I think that's excellent. Of course, I don't think that's in our country. No. Let us know if we're wrong. We
also,
we want more of this going on in our country.
On the air, just let me know if you got the book, 2 of 1. Sorry. But she didn't mention that.
Oh, right. Late. Yeah, Martin, we want to know if you ended up finally getting that package.
No, we didn't.
Oh, things take forever. I mean, like I said, I sent something to Israel, and it took forever for it to get through customs delivered.
I sent it in a way where it should have been there by now, but we'll see. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, and even priority. It's still
I know, exactly.
It's still so I think it depends on the country and their customs and everything else. Not customs as in traditions, but customs as in the government customs. Ken Gardner, who I follow on Twitter and tweet back and forth with sometimes, he says, look, he says, the perfect candidate does not exist. You deal with those who do exist, who can win, and who can start fixing the problems. And, I mean, that's true. We have to choose, right? And we don't, you know, it's not like we can get your own Brooke, for instance. That's always been the one that I would not want to subject him to being president, but if he would do it and if they would allow it, which they won't because he was foreign born, but if they would, it would be great. But this is our dream. This is not happening, right? We've got this lousy slate of candidates. One of them is the one we have to choose. But this is the other side of the coin. Suppose I choose one of them and I say, okay, you know, I want Newt for whatever reason, or I want Romney for whatever reason, because it's probably going to be one of those two, I'm guessing. It doesn't mean I'm going to go out and make phone calls for them or cheer up and down or do a campaign or, you know, suppose I like Bachman, right, for whatever reason. Suppose I decided I liked her. It's not like I'm going to get on the phone for her, because even though I decide among this field, within this context, that there's a certain candidate that I like, all that means is I can hold my nose and vote for them, and I can make that declaration. I can make the declaration that I will vote for them.
You hope
and
that it will be dangerous. You just hope. But that's about it.
Yeah. So it's not like I'm going to be excited. I'm not going to make phone calls. It's not saying a whole lot is what I'm saying. If I tell you, you know, eventually whenever it happens that, you know, okay, I'm going to vote for this one, it doesn't mean I'm going to do much more than vote for them. And it sure means, of course, that I'm going to list the pros and cons as I see them all the way through as time goes on. Although, again, if we stay too close to it all the time, it really can be depressing. And I think a lot of us were watching this GOP race, and we're going to continue to watch it because there's just so much at stake. But when you watch and watch and watch, you realize how truly horrible it is. I don't know if he still does this, but I remember Andy Bernstein saying at one point that he didn't even look at the news, that he looked at the sports page, and I can't remember if he looked at a couple of headlines on the front page or not, but he just kept himself out of news because I guess he thought, A, he wasn't in a position to do anything real about it, and B, it was bringing him down. Everybody's got to make that choice for themselves about
how much. It seems like it has to be either or at a certain point, but I don't know if I can go there. Not now. I got to be involved.
Well, and, you know, for instance, even Leonard Peikoff doesn't keep himself completely immune from news. But I know that he's at certain points in time made choices of which newspaper he'll read.
Right.
Because certain newspapers, the coverage is so bad that you just decide, okay, I'm done with that newspaper, forget it.
The truth is given a chance in some papers.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Fox News. It's not perfect, but it...
It does give the truth a chance.
Yeah, it does a little bit better. So, you know, for me, I'm looking forward to improving, expanding the bot. I'm going to teach privacy law at a law school first time this semester, which is awesome. Work more on my book, hopefully expand this show, and look forward to giving those conference lectures in July, which I think will be fun. In terms of resolutions, I'm working on, you know, some other ones, but I have some friends on Facebook who are doing this thing called Whole30, which is a very strict diet, very strict, and you keep it for 30 days. And it's a good idea because the idea is that you restrict your diet, you see how you feel, and then when you see how you feel, having cut out all these things that are essentially inflammatory or poisonous, then you could maybe add back one at a time and see how each different variable affects you. So I look at it and I say, well, can I do the exact Whole30 plan, or do I want to do the Whole30 plan? I've been doing a paleo-ish kind of thing for a while, but the ish has gotten bigger over the last several months. So I'm thinking, okay, what would I do to get closer to Whole30? And what I came up with was getting more sleep, cutting out these so-called gluten-free cheat items that contain a lot of corn. Some people think all you have to do is do gluten-free, but I don't think that's enough. It seems that you also have to cut out other grains that can cause you problems, especially corn. Cutting out alcohol for a month, which isn't necessarily a big deal, but it does mean that anything that's going to make our show more fun to listen to, like vodka beforehand, like those shots of vodka we do just before, those are out. That's right. Only full cream for creaming coffee. Plus, reducing coffee. So that's the other thing that can make the show good. Is no, you know, if we don't have coffee in the afternoon, I don't know. The show might just become completely boring.
I just had two cups on the air.
Yeah.
Back to back.
Back to some higher quality things that I was foregoing because I, A, didn't want to go to the extra trip to the, you know, the Whole Foods.
Right.
And the high quality and also nitrate-free things.
Right.
You know, sometimes you skimp on that if you can't find it at your regular store. So you figure, okay, don't buy wine, spend more money on higher quality of certain things, more veggies, fewer carbs, and then clarify butter. Supposedly that's a big thing too. Fewer politics?
Yeah.
Fewer politics, you think? Is that part of our diet?
Yeah, I think so.
Now, here's one. You might disagree with this one, Bosch. What do you think? No sugary desserts for a month.
That's all I have every day. I love desserts.
Diet's really hard, right? Because it's a slippery slope. It is true that some of the things that we eat that are either convenient or that we love are bad for us.
When I say I love desserts, I mean I love Nutella. I have a jar once, twice a year, tops. That's it.
Thomas here says, I've been eating a lot of ish too. Yeah. Some people say, what is the paleo diet? Is that really true, Deborah, that you don't know what it is? That's funny because I know Deborah around on Facebook and stuff too. And it seems we have on Facebook have so many people that spread information about the paleo diet. But I'll be glad to tell you more. If
it seems like we're moving closer to a better diet though. If the last few years, I mean, it really.
Well, we went closer and then we got off track.
Well, I think which is why we need to go through this sharp, you know, turn.
Right. Well, this is not too sharp, right? Because I mean, really,
it would have been without the coffee.
Yeah.
Without the sugar, which to me is impossible. I mean, without the cream for the coffee.
Yeah, without the cream for the coffee, because they recommend absolutely no dairy. And I'm talking about going back to higher quality Greek yogurt, but cutting back a little bit on that. So I'm talking about severely cutting back my dairy, but not completely eliminating. Mm. I think that corn is evil. I think that
might be the culprit for certain things. I mean, it might be.
I think the corn is pretty evil. So when you try to cheat with gluten-free pasta, don't.
Yeah, you think it might be okay, but I don't think so.
It starts that slippery slope. It's this big slippery slope. So the way I put it is that I'm going back up the slippery slope a bit. Now, what do we have here on our feedback on our diet? First of all, they're all scared because our show is going to be horrible because we won't have any alcohol or caffeine.
You take two shots at least before you show me. I'll get it.
Chris says Nutella is good in coffee.
How about Nutella coffee?
Yeah. No sugary desserts. Does Whole30 say anything about whether life is worth living, says Chris. This is the thing. You have to balance. And
look.
The sugary desserts.
But when you go out, what do you have for dinner? I mean, it's just nice to have that. That's all. You know? You don't think we had the pumpkin?
We split a piece of pumpkin cheesecake.
We saw Tintin also, by the way. It's really, incredibly done. It's very
really
good, well told, but visually unbelievable. Incredible.
So movies make life worth living even if you're not eating sugary desserts, yes. Chris. They can. No starch, no potatoes, says Sarah. Yes, and that is the strict version. So Sarah here in the chat room is doing the strict version of this diet.
Right.
No starch, no potatoes of any kind. Some of us do eat the sweet potatoes.
Yeah, the yams.
And some of us eat sweet potatoes and rice. But anyway, so that's one sort of variation on it is to do it very strictly. Carrots or root vegetables, if you cut those out, that's a pretty strict version of it. Or Earl says, I think the gluten-free pasta made from rice might not be quite as bad for you as that made from corn. Yes, and that's true. If you can find one.
But the texture, did we have it before? It was like breaking up a little too easily.
That's the thing. Right? I mean, if you're not going to have real pasta,
then
you're going to be sacrificing
something else.
Yeah, so Earl says, some consider dairy and root veggies to be acceptable on paleo, but most agree that regular white potatoes should be kept in moderation because the amount of starch. Yes, and regular white potatoes I try to stay away from. I don't really have a draw for them anyway too much. The occasional very fresh French fry, like I like to have one or two, but I don't like to eat very much of that stuff. But anyway, I don't need to bore you with diet stuff. You can get diet stuff on all these other shows. My point is that I think I have made a list of things that are different enough from my diet that will make a difference for me, you know, cutting out some actually evil stuff, plus things that I can realistically stick to, not only for a month, but I think beyond that, assuming that I see the good effects that I see.
What we read here, I mean, what I see, I think we can do rather easily. I mean, again, if it's with the cream, with the sugar and coffee, yes, I can do that.
You've got to,
I would like some, a little wine with dinner here and there. I mean, I would.
Well, and you've got to balance convenience and something that you'll stick to that, suits your lifestyle with not consuming things that are really bad. And if I see a big difference, I'm probably going to attribute most of it to cutting out the corn stuff. Because we were eating too much of the corn-based, gluten-free stuff.
Right.
And if I do, then I will probably be content to get rid of corn forever. So there's certain things that you say, okay, this is bad.
Corn.
I will get rid of forever.
Corn.
I guess if you told me that dairy had that bad effect, I might consider it too. But I don't know. So have I bored you to death, guys? On
diet?
I don't
think so. They seem to be typed away.
Yeah. Fresh sweet corn is not that bad. So maybe it's all the processed corn that's in the thing?
Possibly. You really have corn, though, except when we go to the pig place.
Well, and we usually have corn only in, so processed in parts of different things. And who knows what the corn looks like when it's come out and turned into a piece of gluten-free pasta. I don't know. So 2012, some positive changes. I think, obviously, New Year's resolutions are decent to make. You have to make resolutions that you believe in, that are measurable, and I think also commit to a certain amount at a time. If you overwhelm yourself with too many things to commit to, you'll never get it done.
My resolution is to end jihad. That's my New Year's resolution. Forever.
Okay.
I think I might be able to do it. We'll see.
Maybe I should have a resolution to do the longest podcast ever for the Guinness Book of World Records. And just be on the air.
That's it.
And I'd be start babbling and incoherent, but hey, we'd have a Guinness record and then we'd have a lot of publicity and then we'd be famous. So that'd be perfect. No, so doable things. If you look at the Ayn Rand Institute's website, they recently reposted a New Year's resolution piece that was written by Alex Epstein, I think last year or the year before, talking about the real meaning of New Year's resolutions and saying, you know, don't be cynical about this. These are true efforts to make improvements in your life, to make your life better, and you should take them seriously and commit to them. So that's why, you know, when I write something down like this about a diet, I have to say, okay, in my hierarchy of values and what I've seen in terms of the effects of eating these different things on my body, what do I think is called for now? What do I want to stick to? Make that resolution and go forth. So I'll go ahead and report back. I think it's going to help. Everyone here in the chat room is giving advice back and forth, but Chris says, is the McRib paleo? I hope so. Uh-huh. The McRib is like some weird pressed pork into the shape of ribs without bones or something, right? So it's supposed to look like the pork ribs with the bones, but it doesn't have them. It's pretty kind of scary. Anyway, let's go on.
I heard it tastes like meat.
You heard it tastes like meat? It probably tastes more like the sauce that they put on it than it tastes like meat. That's the sad thing about McDonald's. And I heard McDonald's puts a lot of soy in their stuff.
Right.
And soy is definitely something
I one of the best burgers that we have when we go out is that Ruby's. I mean, it's delicious.
Yeah, Ruby's has nice
And they
burgers.
Had some gluten-free bread, which...
Oh, yeah, we tried the gluten-free really bread. It was sad. It was really hurting.
It was taste-free bread.
It was dry.
Yeah. But the burgers are so good.
The burgers are excellent. Okay, so let's get behind our motivation to kick Obama out in 2012. Yep. Here is yet another piece of information that you will have at your disposal to motivate you to hold your nose and vote against Obama this November.
But again, one thing, sorry.
Yeah.
What candidate has come against this?
We'll talk about that. We'll talk in a second about that. Let's get the truth out about Obama first. So I'm reading from a story by Andrew C. McCarthy, who posted National Review Online yesterday, and it's Obama recruits Kara Dowi. I think that's how you pronounce it, Kara Dowi.
I drew him in the Voices of Islam piece for the Freedom Center last year.
Yeah, Kara. And I want you to tell me a little bit more about him in a second here. So he starts out, McCarthy, he says, the surrender is complete now. The Hindu, which is a magazine, and I went and looked at the story and read it for myself, The Hindu reports that the Obama administration has turned to Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, who is the Muslim Brotherhood's leading jurist.
No.
For what purpose? To mediate secret negotiations between the United States and the Taliban. Okay, so first of all, they're having secret negotiations with the Taliban. If that isn't bad enough, the person who they're recruiting as the mediator is somebody who is
Americans.
Yeah, he's someone who's clearly biased on the side of the Taliban.
Yes, yeah.
So tell us about what do you know about Kara Dowi?
Well, he just might not outright kill people, but he will call for others to kill people. And this is one of his quotes.
Actually, before he tells you, I want to tell you this is the funniest thing because Bosch has been doing this series called Voices
for quote unquote Palestine, Voices for Islam, Voices of Hate.
Yeah, so Voices for Palestine. Yeah, so he's been doing this series for David Horowitz, and they publish it on Front Page magazine. So when I saw this story, I said, oh, Bosch, maybe they'll have you draw him for David Horowitz's site.
Right.
And then Bosch went back and looked, and he said, oh, gosh, I already drew him last year.
I did.
So tell us.
And this is the drawing is him. It's called Voice of Islam, and he says this is quoting him. The last punishment of the Jews was carried out by Hitler. Allah willing, the next time will be at the hand of the believers, of the Muslims. And he is the spiritual leader of the Muslim Brotherhood. And this is who Barack Hussein Obama, with a Muslim background,
has appointed to be the mediator, the supposed impartial person.
A guy who wants to wipe out Jews.
Yeah.
And wants to wipe us out.
And, you know, the reason that I guess he's got some sort of plausible deniability of doing this is that there are some quotations attributed to this guy where he criticizes 9/11 or he does this, you know, so they say, oh, you know, he's a moderate.
Okay, you know what?
But
sorry, he's a hardcore stealth jihadist. That's where he might outright kill people, you know.
Yeah.
And when a 9/11 happens, he probably gets pissed off because then that ruins the stealth jihad in a sense where it brings us up to attention, you know.
Right.
That's what Kerr didn't like. And Kerr didn't like 9/11 because of that. Period. But they're like, well, you know, non-Muslims are supposed to be killed. But on that loud level, it's like, damn, too many in one shot.
Well, and then there's a number of quotations that McCarthy shares with us in his article that are straight from the mouth of Al-Qaradawi. Yeah. He issued a fatwa in 2003 calling...
The fatwa was a legal ruling calling
for the killing of American troops in Iraq. And this is what he said, quote, "Those killed fighting the American forces are martyrs, given their good intentions, since they consider these invading troops an enemy within their territories, but without their will. Although they are seen by some as being wrong, those defending against attempts to control Islamic countries have the intention of jihad and bear a spirit of the defense of their homeland," end quote. So it's perfectly justified to go ahead and kill them. He also says that Islam must dominate the world.
Yeah.
Under a global caliphate governed by Sharia. He maintains that Islam, quote, and this is the words of Al-Qaradawi, will conquer Europe and will conquer America, end quote. He sometimes qualifies that the conquering will be done, quote, not through the sword, but through dawah.
Dawah is Muslim, right? Proselytization, but it can be violent, it can be any which way.
Yeah, and he says that McCarthy, who knows a lot about him, who's written a lot about him before, says this is a faint qualification.
I had the honor of being on a panel with McCarthy in November in Florida, which is great.
He says, "Dawah sounds harmless. It refers to missionary work to spread Islam, but Islam is not like other religions. The idea is not that they want to spread this set of spiritual principles, but they want to incrementally impose full-scale social system with its own authoritarian legal code covering all aspects of life, and instituting a case system in which women and non-Muslims are subjugated."
Which requires violence.
And I'll stop there for a second. This is McCarthy writing. So he says women and non-Muslims are subjugated. You can bet homosexuals are added in there too. McCarthy may not have mentioned them because of his religious background. It's not at the forefront of this. But under Sharia, they will also be subjugated. He says, "Nor is Dawah like other missionary work. It is the use of all available means of pressure. Political campaigns, lawfare, infiltration in the media, et cetera, et cetera." We just saw an example this week. Kerr put pressure on WordPress, right? WordPress is the blog host site, to take down a website called Bare Naked Islam.
It was back up today.
It's back up again?
It was back up today.
So how long was it down?
I don't know, for days, it seemed like.
Yeah. So Bare Naked Islam is a website that criticizes Islam.
Jihad.
Criticizes it in a pretty tasteless way at times.
Yeah, but you know what? It is what it is. And we have the freedom to do that. You don't want to visit a site? Don't visit a site.
Yeah, we should have the freedom to do that. So in terms of what Sheikh Qaradawi champions, he champions Hamas, says McCarthy, mass murder attacks, suicide bombings. And then here's a quotation from him. Quote, "They are not suicide operation," he breaks.
Because technically speaking, Islam is against suicide.
Right.
Know, technically speaking.
He says, "These are heroic martyrdom operations." Indeed, he elaborates, quote, "The martyr operations are the greatest of all sorts of jihad in the cause of Allah." Also, Qaradawi urges the destruction of Israel, and he rebukes the clerics who dare counsel against killing civilians. He says, "I'm astonished that some sheikhs deliver fatwas that betray the mujahideen instead of supporting them." I've heard it pronounced different ways. Supporting them and urging them to sacrifice and martyrdom. He says, "As the investigative project on terrorism recounts, when the imam of Mecca's Grand Mosque issued guidance against the killing of civilians, Qaradawi upbraided him, quote, 'It is unfortunate to hear that the Grand Imam has said it was not permissible to kill civilians in any country or state, even in Israel,'" end quote. This is the impartial moderator that Obama
is asking for. He's a mediator between us and the Taliban in negotiations that shouldn't even be taking place.
No.
This is the impartial mediator that they have appointed.
Getting together. They're probably going to make a deal with themselves against us somehow, some way.
Now, you might wonder why the paper that we hear about this is called The Hindu. And it turns out that this Al-Qaradawi is someone about whom Indians are concerned. They're concerned about him consolidating power because he has influence on certain sects of...
Well, he's very influential.
They've caused India in particular problems in the past. So that's their concern. That's why they're concerned that if he's appointed a mediator in these negotiations, that's a sign of his increasing consolidation of power, which is going to pose danger.
I'm sorry, someone on the message boards, Ozua, writes that Bir Negeri Islam will be back up until January 6th, and then WordPress will kick him off again. That's what the press is saying.
Yeah. So, you know, CARE is going out there and putting political pressure on. Oh, you clicked it off?
No.
Okay.
Did you want to?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, we're looking at our chat room little click windows and stuff here, and we're getting all confused because we don't have our coffee, and it's terrible. But in any event, these negotiations shouldn't be taking place.
No.
You've got Obama appointing as a mediator or, you know, recruiting as a mediator. This guy who's not impartial and who may cause damage to other peaceful countries in the region, like India.
And Obama doesn't give a damn.
And this is terrible. So when I look at something like this, and again, you can go read more at the article on National Review Online. Again, look for McCarthy. The thing that gets me about this is if you think, okay, look at all of the candidates out there that we've got, the GOP candidates. Would any of them do this same thing? Would they, A, negotiate with Taliban?
Only one comes to mind.
Some of them might negotiate with the Taliban.
Possibly.
Maybe?
Possibly. But with this guy with his record out there, I don't know if anyone would want to touch that except for one guy. Possibly.
Well, right. And then the other thing is, even if they would negotiate with the Taliban, which of them would appoint a mediator from the Muslim Brotherhood like this?
We know.
I can think of one.
Only one. Ron Paul.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. Because with Ron Paul, it's like we are Dr. Frankenstein, the jihadists of Frankenstein. We created them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what they do to us because, you know, we created them, right?
Whenever you've got a problem where you're looking at a lot of imperfect candidates and you are consolidating all this information, it's like making any other decision where you put a whole lot of incommensurables in front of your brain, right? You list, people make lists and stuff, so you do that. And then what you try to do is you try to get a perspective on the digestion of all the information in the list by asking yourself certain questions.
Yeah.
So I think asking a question like this will highlight what I think is the scariest thing about a Ron Paul presidency, which is that if he has the job of commander in chief, which if you think about it, you know, we're counting on the next president to scale back big government, but in a proper society, the primary job, the primary thing that we worry about with the president is for him being commander in chief to protect us against these foreign invaders.
Ron Paul doesn't think that's important.
And it's too important. You know, and I think he gets it wrong regarding the nature of Islam.
Yes.
You know, some of the language.
He just says, he goes, I don't believe Islam, you know, is at war with us. And that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And he'll say things like, he says, from their perspective, they're just defending themselves.
It's like he's
echoing the same kind of things that Al-Qaradawi says in this article.
Absolutely.
That same kind of language is used by Ron Paul. Obama just doesn't say very much. And when he does talk about Islam, he praises it.
And, you know, this, I mean, about the jihad for the last 1,000 years, where were we? Where was Israel back then? I mean, they had their own motivation, but Ron Paul doesn't want to hear it. And on top of that, but you know what? The scarier question is, who would I vote for if it's Ron Paul or Obama? And I might have to choose a certain way. I don't want to even go there right now.
Yeah.
But I do have a damn good idea which way I would choose.
Well,
and it's not obvious, are there?
Well, there's only one thing that just gives me a little bit of pause, right? And I have said I won't vote for Ron Paul.
I have said too, but...
Well, okay, there's only one thought that gives me any hope if you had Ron Paul there. But I don't think it's enough. I really don't. This is a thought that occurred to me, the argument for voting for him.
Like a constitutional robot.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Well, he's a constitutionalist robot. But the other thing is, Congress can declare war. And then I'll be damned if Congress declares war and he doesn't do anything.
Absolutely. Like, okay. He might, you know what I mean? Like a robot. Just
there's that argument to consider. I'm not saying I'm going to vote.
Absolutely.
I don't even think, I really don't think that it's going to be Ron Paul versus Obama.
Even if he wins Iowa. Even if he wins. Because last time, what? Huckabee won it. So what?
Yeah. Some people say so wrong. What? Oh, I'm not sure.
Maybe try and take it out of context, you know.
It could.
Because in fact, look, if he is, he domestically, he would try to roll back a lot of this crap. That's what happened. No doubt about it. Good. But I don't think, again, he would be allowed to get away with not defending us.
Well, here's my other argument. You could say that if we were not following on an Obama, who, as far as I can tell, is doing everything in the world to strengthen the Islamic influence in that region, right? He's made it so much worse.
Yeah.
You could say, okay, well, somebody who purports to be neutral like Ron Paul wouldn't do so much damage, but it's coming after Obama. Yeah. And whoever comes next has to clean up the mess.
And be strong against the enemy.
And I don't think it's enough to count on Congress to declare war. When was the last time Congress declared war? So I think it's a disaster. And you know, the main job of the president, I hate to say it, is commander-in-chief. And
it's not to say it. It's a fact. I mean, he all speaks about, you know, the founders and the Constitution. It's like you need to defend us.
There's also all that states' rights stuff that he does too, and I don't like that either.
Terrible.
We want to go on to a little bit of positive before the show is over. Oh, actually, I do have someone on hold here. I want to go ahead and say hi for a second here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Happy New Year, Amy. Happy New Year, Bosh.
Happy New Year. I'm about to go to something positive, but you've got something on the politics here?
Well, yeah, actually, I was going to ask the question that I heard Bosch ask, which is, what do you think if you had to choose between Ron Paul and Obama?
I don't think I could vote for Ron Paul.
I mean, I don't think so either, but there's that question there, you know, and it's, I mean, he's still going up in the polls. Possibly he might eke it out. I don't know. He might get a check.
I hope not. I definitely would not want to make that choice. But I've heard some people argue, Mark Stein argued on when he hosted Rush Limbaugh last week, that he would choose Ron Paul because he's not really any worse than Obama when it comes to foreign policy, but he's much better when it comes to domestic policy. And so overall, we would be in a better situation. And I was wondering what you guys think about that.
My knee-jerk is to reject that, though, because...
But one thing, Obama is an Islamophile. He is, and he knows Islam. This idiot doesn't.
Ron Paul is acting as if he's an Islamophile.
Well, Obama has allowed the Middle East to become more Islamic. It's only
and so then the thing is that I guess if it's Obama versus Ron Paul, I don't know.
No, but it's a sick question.
I'm evading the question right now. Here I go. evasion, and we're gonna go on to something fun. Are you ready for something fun, Deborah?
Yeah, definitely.
I gave you the pros and cons. I gave you my plausible argument for why you might sleep at night if you voted for Ron Paul.
I think Obama
in that situation.
Is just more dangerous. I think he is more dangerous, and that's why, you know, that's why.
Okay.
You know?
Bosch is trying to say something without saying anything. So that's our non-answer.
I hadn't really come to any conclusive decision myself either. I just thought it was kind of
I think our mind will
consider.
Not let us.
I'm just glad the primary's first. That's all I can say.
Get them out.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we'll be watching what happens in a couple of days. We'll know soon enough whether he has any hope in Iowa. So hopefully we'll be surprised pleasantly.
And we'll be rid of Rick Santorum. That's something that I'm hoping for.
Supposedly he's rising in the polls now. Why?
He is. Because of the evangelicals.
Terrible. Okay, I'm going to go on to good news. We're going to thank you, Deborah, for calling. We're going to talk about something good. First of all, like I said, there was the Letterman. That Letterman actually didn't cave this last year in 2011. I thought that was great. And the other good stuff has to do with what we're learning about Steve Jobs. Now, you might say this is sad because the more that we learn about this great stuff about Steve Jobs, the more we realize what we've lost. But we haven't completely lost it because, as I said, people are being inspired by Jobs and they are, I'm hoping, adopting his better ideas, the rational ideas that he has.
Regardless of all, you know, the stuff with, you know, he's an air guy and all that, he was a real individualist, you know? He really was.
Yeah.
I mean, he really was, and he's likable. In spite of all that stuff that everybody, he's very likable.
If you have time, there is a very long interview. I think it's an hour and 43 minutes or something, and I've posted the link to it on my Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook, so you can find the link there. Easy to find me on Facebook. Just search Don't Let It Go Unheard. And one thing that I just had to point out to you, it was great because at a certain point, they started asking Jobs about, you know, what's your advice for the next generation of entrepreneurs? Can they succeed? And he started to say, yes, you know, they can. And he had some weird things to say about death that go beyond what he said in that Stanford graduation address that you've probably seen of his. He was saying basically that death is necessary to wipe the slate clean of people who are set in their ways in terms of their ideas so that the young people can come and innovate. And he did hold out the possibility that you could, you know, correct this thing about human beings that makes them get sort of set in their thinking. But he said until that time, there's always going to be opportunities for young people and also young corporations to come in and innovate. So then he was asked about, you know, what do you need to be an entrepreneur? And he was very good to say that being an entrepreneur is a lot of work. He says you need an idea, a problem, or a wrong that you want to right, that you're passionate about. Otherwise, you won't have the perseverance that's necessary. So he's very good on that sort of thing. But then the questioner, and again, the questioner is on the, you know, on the premise of people looking to Steve Jobs as a role model.
Yeah.
And the questioner in the interview wants him to tell people how to live their lives, right? Yeah. And so the question that he feeds Steve Jobs is about economic power. He says, what would you say about the responsibilities of power once you've achieved a certain level of success? And Steve Jobs, it was classic. You have to watch it. It's about an hour and 16 minutes into the video. And Jobs says back to him, he says, power, what is that?
Right.
It was classic because clearly this guy is talking about economic power and Jobs doesn't even acknowledge that as power. He just rejects it. So then the questioner comes back and pushes it, you know, he presses the issue. He says, what are the responsibilities of those who have succeeded and who have economic power, social power, et cetera? And Jobs comes back and he says, yes, if you run a company, you have some responsibilities that are connected with the company. He says, but as an individual, I don't think you have responsibilities. I think the work speaks for itself, and I don't think people have special responsibilities because they've done something that people like or don't like. He says, I think the work speaks for itself. I think people can choose to do things if they want to. And he says, you know, and then he took kind of a pause and he thought about this. And he says, you know, we're going to all be dead soon. And he said, you know, the quote that he heard from someone earlier that he used to say a lot. He says, live each day as if it will be your last and someday you will be right. He says, and I do that. He says, you never know when you're going to go. And if you're going to leave anything behind, it's going to be your kids, your friends, and your work. And when I heard that, I thought his wife is hurting at that moment. But that's what he said, your kids, your friends, and your work. I guess he counts his wife among his friends or something. He says, so that's what I tend to worry about. He says, I don't tend to think about responsibility. And then he went on and made light of it. And he says, I don't think in those terms. He says, I think you have a responsibility to do really good stuff, put it out there for people to use,
that's
et cetera.
That's one of the best things I've heard.
But that's it.
Right. I mean, right there. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
You have the responsibility to the best you possibly can.
Yeah. I mean, and you put it out there and let people build on the shoulders of it, et cetera. And then when the questioner.
You owe them is your best work.
Yeah.
And
when the questioner tried to follow up and say, do you have responsibility only to yourself? Jobs says, no, you have responsibility to your team and to the integrity of the work. So I thought it was excellent. I thought it was really good for
him.
With
conviction. I mean, total conviction. There was no, you know, he believed it all.
And thousands of people are watching this. So where I'm very sad that Steve Jobs died, that we lost him. I am happy that people are just drinking in the good things that he had to say.
You know, besides the great works that he's done, now we get to hear him and his actual thoughts on these things. It's great.
Yeah. A lot of people in the chat room are fans of Steve Jobs as well. So I'm happy to see it. And again, spread the word. Spread that interview. If you find the link on my page, send it out. So that gives
check out
me
my Rob Paul cartoons also. I made one too many this week.
Yeah, he did a lot of those.
Boston.blogspot.
Boston.blogspot.com is Bosch's. Mine is don'tletitgo.com, because at don'tletitgo.com you can subscribe to my blog, keep up with me during the week. You can follow me at Amy Peacock on Twitter. And, of course, follow the Ayn Rand bot on Twitter. Take care. Have a good evening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Did you get the last words? Yeah, actually, I wasn't.